The following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Welcome to the official Infernal Legion podcast. I'm your host, Reverend Jeff Bowling, commander of the Infernal Legion, and today is a very special Wicked Warrior episode. In a little bit, I'll be sitting down with Satanist Robert Shirley. Robert is one of the newest members of the Infernal Legion. Now that may not be new, because I often interview the latest members of the Legion on this show. But this episode is a first, because Robert is a veteran of the Canadian Armed Forces, and currently works for the Canadian Department of National Defense as a public servant. Now, I know what you were thinking. Wait a minute, Jeff. Didn't I just hear you and Robert Shirley on another podcast? You did. This past Wednesday, Robert released the latest episode of his show, The Neutral Wisdom Podcast. The episode is titled, I Gotta Be Me, a nod to Sammy Davis Jr., a former warlock of the Church of Satan. And I was his guest to discuss how to maintain individuality in an environment that demands conformity, much like the military. I highly recommend that all of our listeners go check out the Neutral Wisdom podcast. Robert Shirley's doing some amazing stuff over there. The links will be at the end of this episode. I had a blast sitting down with Robert and recording that episode of his show, and here's a little peek behind the curtain for you. We had such a good time that once we turned off the recorder, we switched over to the service that I use and recorded this episode. So if by the end we both sound a little tired, it's because we have been talking for around 5 hours. But all that time was worth it. Rob is a truly outstanding individual with a great story to tell, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So, pour yourself a strong cocktail, settle in with your favorite snack, and get ready for this awesome conversation with Satanist Robert Shirley. But first...
Sometimes since. Sometimes guitar. Get yours only here on the Metro at RadioFreeSatan.com. Hail Satan.
Well, man. It is now official.
The Shit-Kickin' Road Show, the finest in rockabilly, psychobilly, vintage country, swamp rock, surf rock, doo-wop, this potpourri of madness. The Shit-Kickin' Road Show, Radio Free, goddamn Satan. I'm Clint Mephisto coming at you from the Double Cross Ranch. Booze in one hand, microphone on the other, swamp thing on the telly, and the good tunes in front of me here at the computer. The Shit-Kickin' Road Show, Radio Free, Satan.
Damn! You will excuse me, won't you? Well, thank you very much.
Welcome back to the official Infernal Legion podcast. I am joined by a spectacular gentleman, our Wicked Warrior of the Month, Satanist Rob Shirley. Rob, how you doing, brother? Welcome to the show.
Not too bad. Thanks for having me here. I wasn't aware I was going to be the Wicked Warrior of the Month, so I guess I'll be looking for the calendar. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Well, we're all going to be shirtless in it, so.
Oh, good God.
Yeah, okay. Gotta start doing some bench press. I wanted to have you on specifically because, A, you're one of our most recent Legionnaires. You just recently joined the Infernal Legion. And two, you're not an American veteran.
No, sir.
That's going to be, I think, an interesting perspective for our listeners and for the other Legionnaires. You served in the Canadian military.
That's correct.
All right, so I want to get into all the specifics behind this and find out what the differences and the similarities are. But before we do, we have to go back to Baby Bob. Why did you decide to join the military as a young man?
My mother made me. That's the short answer. You know what? It ties into my story, my upbringing, but I went through my parents' divorce at about 13, 14 years old, and I was headed down a few bad roads, and my mother kind of intervened and said, you know what, the neighbor kid goes to sea cadets, guess what you're doing on Thursday nights? And that's literally where it started. So I started attending sea cadets, and I absolutely hated it. I was not into the discipline, and of course, now I'm dating myself, but this was the 80s, So, you know, you were still allowed to take people behind the building and educate them.
Right, a little wall counseling, yeah.
Yes, we're into the wall counseling as we used to do. And I really didn't take to it very well, but it was good for me, so I had to keep going. And once I kind of latched into the program and realized, you know what, I actually really like the discipline and the different things I get to do. So where does this disenfranchised youth get to go and fire rifles or do scuba diving? Or hell, they sent me to summer camp for 2 months every year for free, you know, where I got to grow and develop my talents. So
of course, yeah.
I really did latch onto the program there. And so when I was in the Sea Cadets, I joined, I guess it was the early 80s, and I made Cadet Chief Petty Officer Second Class. So that would be, you know, Cadet Chief Petty Officer E7. Kind of the same thing at the cadet level. When I aged out, I joined the Naval Reserve. I taught orchestral percussion and drumming for 3 years across Canada and made O2 with the Naval Reserve. So was still a competitive player, did some teaching on the west coast of Canada, in the Central Prairies, worked with a lot of kids, with a lot of other reserves. I think the highlight of my teaching career was probably teaching at the National School of Pipes and Drums in London, Ontario, as a drumming instructor and a drum major instructor. And when I got out of the military, I continued on with the music because I had built such an amazing reputation as a military drum major. I was approached by a lot of cultural organizations such as the opera to do some supernumerary roles as a drum major in, for example, La Boheme. So wherever they need someone to perform.
So you were good at this.
I was actually. I was a national level competitor, and I won the national championships twice for bugle and pipe bands. And I got a lot out of it. I was able to reflect back on that time later as a Satanist and realize that, you know, it also kind of planted the seeds of Satanism fairly early in me, although I didn't come to it till afterwards. I know that my military career is a lot shorter compared to, you know, your own or most of the veterans that listen to the show. But one of the reasons that I was looking forward to coming on the show is because I have actually been a public servant with the Government of Canada for over 20 years and with the Department of National Defense for 8 years. So I work at a fairly high level in the Air Force. I was overseeing contracting for all of the RCAF wings in the Royal Canadian Air Force, providing guidance, providing policy oversight, providing staff assistance to all of these RCAF wings to give them the knowledge to go out and hire people. So much like the DOD hires contractors in theater, we do the same thing. We do that domestically and in theater as well. And I would be considered a subject matter expert in contracting for the Department of National Defense right now.
Wow. All right. You've continued serving after serving and have had a long and storied career in the military.
Well, so, I have. And
well, in the military, quote unquote.
in the military institution, let's say that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a great transition for me to come into the military because I was already familiar with military customs, with the military lifestyle. I wore boots, so I understand what it's like to wear boots and not get the stuff that you want because some civilian screwed up somewhere down the road.
Oh, yeah, and that's a big point of contention. I'm sure any veteran listening to this will remember when they had to deal with a civilian in the military and what a pain in the ass it was.
Yes, we can be. Yes. I have actually worked extensively with the US DOD as well. Okay. So I actually was the Canadian civilian subject matter expert for contracting with NORAD US NORTHCOM. We had set up a binational contracting coordination cell, and the intent was to bring the Canadian and U.S. forces together to work together in the event of a North American situation. We would coordinate the contracting functions between the U.S. and Canada, especially in areas like the far north. You guys do things a lot differently than us because you come in and take over, and we're a little more fair than that. Basically, I remember a situation where
the elder brother always has to be strong arm.
Oh, you are the big brother. You'll play the sandbox with us sometimes. You might not hit us in the face with a Tonka truck, but we had a situation during an exercise where we were dealing with a northern town, and they wanted to set up a northern post there. And I recall the NORAD guy saying to us, how much fuel does this town have? Because that's usually how it would work for you. And I remember saying to them, doesn't matter how much they have, you can't have it. Because if you if you take all their fuel, these people are all going to freeze.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So our method of doing contracting in the military is the military has to tell the supplier community what it is they want, and the supplier community has to demonstrate that they can meet it. Where it can be a little different, where you guys will move in and take over.
Yeah.
We have different policies. So we were getting a lot of this happening between the two countries because we have our rules. You have your rules. Do you have to follow my rules if you come into Canada for defense? Not necessarily, but it always helps.
Right, exactly. Because it's still a relationship that we're trying to foster between two nations.
100%.
But it is interesting to hear that because there is, I've long described, and I don't think it's a surprise to anyone, that the United States is an empire. We pretend like we're not, but we very much are an empire. And it's very interesting to hear that kind of the difference of mentality between a regular country like Canada and an empire like the United States. And like, well, we're just going to bully way around. Like, okay, well, yeah, you know, hey, these are our people. Let's calm down a little bit here. Rome, relax, Rome.
Exactly. And when in Rome, right?
Right.
So it was a bit of a sticky wicket to be in there and kind of saying, okay, how do you guys work? What is it you do that's so different from what I do? And actually the folks at J4 and NORAD said, you know what? You need to be trained in how we do business. So I think, and I stand to be corrected, but I believe I'm one of the only Canadians, if not the only Canadian, that is qualified in the JOPEC through the DOD. So that, of course, knowing joint operational contract support planning and execution. So I'm very familiar with how you go over and set up a JOA, how you set up your OCS. It really helped me to be able to work with the Americans and kind of meld the two cultures together.
Mm.
So absolutely fascinating to work with you guys to see how different you operate. And one of the things that I was able to pull actually from the DOD was you guys train your people how to be customers.
That's very true.
Fascinating. I came back home to Canada and I said, why are we not doing this? So we're fighting with our clients 99% of the time because they don't know how to tell us what they want. You guys give a course on it. So I stole it and now I give it.
Tactically acquired, I believe is what we call it.
Much better.
This episode is brought to you by Duffel Blog. Read in the Pentagon and around the world, since 2012, Duffel Blog has been the most trusted news source for the American military. Duffel Blog is the first and only satire newsletter devoted to the United States military community. Visit duffelblog.com for more information.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there. Let me take it backwards just for a little bit here. So you were a drummer in the Canadian Reserves, Naval Reserves.
Yes.
You said you were an O2. Now, is that in Canada, is that an officer rank or is that an enlisted rank?
Yes, it's an officer rank. That would be the same as your, I believe, LTG, your USN LTG was what I had made it to. We would call that an acting sub-lieutenant. I wasn't in very long. Shit rolls downhill, and it always ends up at the feet of that 22-year-old kid, and I didn't have the maturity or the wherewithal to deal with the piles at my feet. And having been a champion drum major and a competitive drummer, I kind of had a bit of an ego. So,
of course, yeah.
You know,
like any musician, like any good musician does.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're all flakes too, but you know, we won't go down that road. But I didn't exactly have the maturity or the skills to be able to deal with that. So I left, and didn't get involved again with military lifestyle until I joined the Department of National Defense as a public servant.
Okay. So as an officer going in, I assume because you were in the band or in the musician corps, whatever you guys refer to it as, you had to be coming from a musical background. Or did they just teach you from the beginning, like, hey, you're going to play drums and here they go?
Well, I wanted to be the guy with the stick. That was my thing, right? The natural show.
Oh, leading. Yeah, I got it.
Yes, you. And I wanted that job in the worst way. And I remember being a little kid looking at the drum major going, that's my job. And I approached the band officer and said, hey, I want to do that. The band officer said, well, you got to learn how to play something. Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll be a drummer then. And that's kind of where that all started.
So it really was kind of a learning on the fly almost situation. That's crazy.
Yep.
Now, I'm a United States. I'm you know, the dirty imperialist down here in the South. When we go into the military, officer or enlisted, there's some type of initial training, and that's usually dictated by your branch of service, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps. Everyone trains their personnel in the manner prescribed to their branch. But I've heard, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the way the Canadian military does it is they kind of start everybody in the same initial program and then split them off by their branch. Is that accurate?
As far as I know, it still is. Yeah. They start them all at one central basic training, and then they all split off into their environmental training. They continue on with their training after that. Yeah.
Now, did you have to go through this process?
A very shortened version of it. Because I was more of an instructor, I kind of went in as an officer cadet right away and was kind of put out to perform and to teach right away. So I took the basic officer qual course that we had to take, but that was pretty much the extent of it for me. But our Army reserves, our Air reserves, any of our reserve forces do have to take an abbreviated basic training. So just a shorter version of what the big kids get to take. But they're all together at first.
So how does that work in practice? For example, I was in the Army, and while on the back end of my career, I know what the Air Force or the Navy ranks are and how they kind of function, my basic training was completely different from Navy boot camp or Air Force training. So how does that work? How do you get a soldier, airman, a sailor, and they all go through the same boot camp? What are the ranks the same across the branches, or
we are based largely off the Commonwealth. So our Navy is based off of the Royal Navy, our Air Force based off the Royal Air Force. And of course the Army would be the Royal Army. So,
right.
we use the rank and insignia of the Commonwealth forces. So for example, the Air Force is silver rank insignia. The Army uses pips and crowns to denote their ranks. The Navy uses, what we call the captain's curl, in their boards, on their shoulder boards. But the rank structure is still a lieutenant is a lieutenant is a lieutenant.
Okay. But the structure of the names are all the same.
Yeah, more or less.
For the most part.
So every
service member going into this kind of joint basic training, basically, is learning all of this?
I think that would probably wait until they move into their component-specific training.
Okay.
You know, they're observing the rank structure at the school, and, you know, they're calling the sergeant to sergeant, or a PO, whatever they're told to call them, that's what they're calling them, so...
Gotcha. It's fascinating to me. My brain just automatically works by the branch, right? And you have to kind of I was in the Army. I had to accidentally learn what the Navy calls their people. And I still am not sure I get it, because we are weird here in the U.S. when it comes to our Navy. So you went through an abbreviated kind of officer basic course, essentially.
Right.
And then we're kind of spun out to teach music.
Yes.
So, and you kind of mentioned this before we were recording, your job, even though you were playing drums and teaching people how to play drums, your job was really public relations. It was marketing for the military. What is the, patriotic sensibility in Canada? Because obviously, you know, the United States, we're all about our flags and our God bless America and what have you. is it easy to kind of present the military as a positive thing in Canada, or is it a little more difficult?
We're going down a road here. there's a lot to unpack with that. I think we're generally very proud of our military. However, I know that the Air Force, the 431 Squadron Snowbirds, are our equivalent to your Blue Angels.
Okay.
And when they travel across the country doing air shows and performances, it is under an operation called Op Inspiration. And it is to inspire Canadians to be proud of their military. Is there a built-in pride? I think it depends on who you speak to. I definitely don't speak for all Canadians or all Canadian military people. I should have referenced that before. The interesting dynamic, and I believe that you've discussed this on your show before, and we've had discussions off the air, is how the Canadian military is trying to get feet into boots. And it's a very interesting dynamic in how we've relaxed our dress regulations. We've changed the way we present ourselves. As an aside, they redid the dress regulations. You know, now hair has to be within a certain length instead of down to the middle of your back.
Listeners of the show, remember in the last couple of episodes, we mentioned the Canadian regulations on, I think the way we put it was the pink wig with metal barrettes when receiving mortar fire. And how that person would no longer have a face.
Yeah, precisely. But what's interesting is they've made this adjustment to the dress regs, and a lot of people are showing up high and tight now. So, find it very, very surprising. It's like, what are you doing? Oh, well, you know, the new dress regs are out now, and I really don't want to be pushing my luck, so I figured I'd go back to what I knew. Is it working? I guess.
In a roundabout way?
It depends on who you talk to. I think, unfortunately, the relaxation of the dress is put into place by a leadership that is a little out of touch with what they think young people want.
I think that's something that Canadian and U.S. armed forces have in common.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's fascinating because my daughter says, you want people in the military. You want young people, Gen Z in the military? Tell them that you're going to pay them to go to school. Because all these kids are freaked out that they can't afford houses, they can't get mortgages, they can't get great jobs. Why are we not marketing our military as, join the military, we'll send you to school, we'll pay you, you'll get a bunch of great skills, and then when you leave...
That's fascinating, because that's one of the major pushes of U.S. military recruiting is we have the GI Bill, we call it, that sends it now at the post 9/11 GI Bill, it essentially pays you to go to school after your career is over. So not only do they pay your tuition, but they give you a monthly stipend, a basic allowance for housing while you're in school. And they pitch that all the time. It's, hey, you know, you want to go to college, there's a couple ways you can do it. You can be a stellar athlete and get a scholarship, or you can join the military and go to school, you know, get paid to go to school.
Exactly.
Canada hasn't been doing that. That's fascinating.
Not really. It's kind of a universal knowledge that if you go to Royal Military College in Kingston, you'll get a university degree and you pay that back with years of service.
Right.
Yeah. And you'll have transferable skills. But my daughter, who is in the exact age demographic that they should be pushing at, is upset in life because she can't get a mortgage. You know, the housing market is terrible. All of the woes of Gen Z.
Right.
The military is such a simple solution to the problem, and we're just not capitalizing on that right now. So
that's absolutely fascinating.
This episode is brought to you by Pando Commando. Founded by veterans of the Army's 10th Mountain Division, Pando Commando is your source for the best veteran gear on the market. Pando Commando specializes in military-themed caps, clothing, and even coffee. Pando Commando is 100% owned and operated by veterans of the United States Armed Forces. Visit pandocommando.com for more information.
As you said, it was a short career. You're a musician, which is basically, as we touched on, basically a public relations position. In between your role as a public servant and the military itself, what was that kind of, because at this point you were a reservist. I'm assuming you already had like a civilian life outside of the military. Were you able to continue that life, or did you kind of take a drastic turn because now the military had changed your perception?
This would be the part where you would look at my resume and go, what did you do between 1992 and 2000, whatever? You know, it was a big hole. Actually, being a full-time performing musician and a teacher, when I no longer had that, I really became lost. It was, my identity was so wrapped up in that I didn't really know what to do with myself. So I, you know, joined a rock band, decided, well, I'm not going to play drums anymore. I'm not going to play drums anymore because those things are a pain to haul around. So guess I'll be a bass player. Spent a number of years playing in all the best bands you never heard of, did a bunch of tours, did a bunch of records, and never got anywhere. So it was good. And I did get to pull a lot of, because I had done all the performing, it fed into my stage presence and the things that I was able to do. But really, without that military identity, for the longest time, I was lost. I had a really hard time letting it go.
I think a lot of us go through that. Most of us go through that. And obviously, active duty guys, our woes are pretty public knowledge at this point in the post-Global War on Terrorism era. Mm-hmm. My generation of the military has been much more open and honest about our experiences. Some could say that's a detriment in general, but I think it's a net positive because the world learns what life is really like in the military. One of the things you hear the most out of every veteran is that life after the military is not, it's like a giant speed bump. You have to figure out, you have to get your shocks refitted on your vehicle.
You do.
At the back end, you know.
You do. You know, for perspective, I went from being a rock star to being a nobody. It was a hard, fast crash to come down that quick. And my identity was so tied up in that, that it was really difficult to adjust to not. And unfortunately, I carried the ego with me for a little while till I realized, hey, you know what? This doesn't fly out here. People think I'm a jerk. So
that's very common amongst veterans as well, because it's a different mentality. It's a, hey, fuckface, get your mind right, versus Susan, could we approach this in a different manner?
hey, fuckface is a little more direct and much more effective, for sure.
So you kind of tooled around, you played with a couple of bands and did that, and then at some point something clicked in your mind, you decided to join the super evil military industrial complex.
That's correct.
What led to that decision?
It was kind of through my career in the public service as a contracting person, and if there are any public service out there, it's a little tough to move around in the public service at the lower levels, and I was looking to get into this line of work, which is contracting policy, writing contracts, buying things. The DND had an opportunity for me to advance my career doing something that I was already well versed in, and I did have the advantage of being familiar with the culture. So it was a very positive move for me. And being thrown from the Navy to the Air Force was a huge culture shock, but I got used to it pretty quick. I find that our Air Force is a lot looser in terms of rank and file structure.
Don't tell our airmen legionnaires, but the same is true down here.
Well, and the way it was explained to me was awesome, because they said, we're all in the same cockpit doing the same job, and if the plane crashes, we all die together. So we're working together right now, and they're not as they're a lot more informal, I find, when working at headquarters. The NCMs and the officers are intermingling all the time. They're having casual conversations. They still obviously respect rank, but it's a little more informal than, say, the Army would be.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting dynamic, because as we, you know, as a contracting person who works with the Air Force, we deploy and we get there in a matter of hours. You like to joke that you guys have 6 months to plan while you're on the boat going over there.
Right.
But we land and we need to be reactive immediately. So it's a different culture as well in terms of being proactive versus reactive. We are far more reactive because we are deployed at a moment's notice and suddenly we've got an air crew on the ground that need a place to stay. They need NTVs. They need, you know, it's definitely a different working environment than what you would have experienced in terms of procurement or what your contracting people would have done.
Yeah.
Fortunately, in my position today, I'm more of an advisor to the command as opposed to a transactional person. I did my time in the trenches, quote unquote, as a doing the actual job, and now I kind of advise command on the policy, what they should and shouldn't do, what they can and can't do, what are the possible ramifications if they step outside the policy. So it's far more of a policy advisor job for me these days, which is, for me, it's a great place to be. You know, it's allowing me to provide my experience and expertise. So
that's great to hear. And, you know, being Satanists, it's always nice to have our kind in positions of shadowy power.
We are everywhere, right?
So I guess kind of to sum up your experience with the Canadian military, what were your biggest takeaways, and what are some of the things that to this day, I mean, obviously you're in a unique situation being a civilian in the military, but what are some of the takeaways that you still hold to? Like how did being in the military change you?
It gave me the definitely a confidence boost. Made me a very confident person. I still polish my shoes. I still iron my pants. I still have a damn straight gig line when I'm dressed up to go out. It really fed into my coming to Satanism because how you present yourself is very, very important. When you put that uniform on or when you're representing the military, that's what people see. They say that person is military. That's what I expect my military person to be. And that, and that
your archetype.
Exactly. And that, yeah. I think that carries forward to a satanic perspective is to say, okay, well, this is the archetype that I'm going to present to the world and I'm going to put my best foot forward with regards to what I put out there. And the military is very good in instilling that. One of the best things I received from my time in the military was my ability to instruct. I've carried that forward into my public service career. And I actually teach contracting to the entire Canadian Forces at the Canadian Forces Logistics Training Center in CFB Borden, Ontario. I teach deployed operational contracting for our folks that are going into theater overseas. So I built that foundation of instructional ability and technique while I was teaching music. Amazing skill set to have picked up.
That's outstanding. And it's a perfect segue to our next topic. So we're going to take a quick break and listen to some ads from our host here, Radio Free Satan. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the dreaded S word. Stay tuned right here on the official Infernal Legion podcast.
Why start your mornings early when you can sleep in late and wake up later to a freshly brewed cup of Radio Free Satan? Radio Free Satan is infernally roasted with a complex taste to suit your indulgence. It's sinful. That's why it tastes great. So pour yourself another helping of this podcast and others at RadioFreeSatan.com.
In 1966, Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan, marking the beginning of the Age of Fire and Year One Anno Satanas. In 1969, he published The Satanic Bible, codifying Satanism as a religion, the first time it's been done in human history.
In the name of Satan, ruler of the earth, king of hell, come forth from the pit, bestow the blessings of hell upon us. For we are your children, and we invoke thee this night.
In 2001, I was appointed High Priest of the Church of Satan. In 2007, I published the Satanic Scriptures, further defining and expanding on Satanic philosophy and greater magic ritual.
Hail Satan, full of might!
Hail Satan, full of might!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Cursed are they!
Cursed are they!
The God adorers!
The God adorers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
Of the Nazarene eunuch!
Of the Nazarene eunuch!
For the past 50 years, the Church of Satan has stood as the sole organization to define and defend Satanism as a religion. And though pretenders to the infernal throne have come and gone, we have stood the test of time and will into the future. Visit churchofsatan.com for more information and read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures. Knowledge is the solution for ignorance. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Welcome back to the official Infernal Legion podcast. We are sitting down with Satanist Rob Shirley today, a veteran of the Canadian Armed Forces and our wicked warrior here in the Infernal Legion. And we just heard about his fascinating career as a musician in the Canadian Armed Forces, and then following that with a career in the military-industrial complex.
Lack of a better
term. Yeah, as a civilian. But there's another aspect of Rob's life, which is why he's on this show in the first place and why he's in the Infernal Legion, and that is the aforementioned dreaded S-word. So, Rob, tell me, when did you first discover the Satanic Bible and the religion of Satanism?
Interesting story. When I was much younger, a friend of mine had introduced it to me, and he was kind of a liberal, smoked a lot of dope. You know, back at that time, it wasn't really acceptable, and he hands me this book, says, dude, you got to take this home and read it. I had at that time, so much Catholic guilt sitting on my shoulders that that book scared the shit out of me. Like, I didn't even open it. Like, it scared me to death. So I gave it back to him unopened. I'm like, I can't read this. But that was, I recognize that now as Catholic guilt and from where I came from. Yeah. So the interesting thing was, I had kind of, well, I was raised a Catholic. And so went through all the Catholic rites, didn't know that any other religions existed because I grew up in the, in a rural community, and kind of always said, well, okay, look at those other kids. They're doing fun stuff at their churches. They're doing fun stuff. We don't do fun stuff at the Catholic Church. We eat a lot of ham and pierogies at Christmas, but that's it. What the hell? Why are they getting to do fun stuff? Turns out those kids were Protestants, but
see.
and then of course the my dad worked at a company that was owned by Mennonite folks, and they ran a summer camp. So of course all the employees, kids got a free week of camp, and so off goes a little Catholic kid to Mennonite Bible camp, and I get there and I look, and first of all, they don't have any father anything. It's pastor this and pastor that, and they're all married with kids. And I'm like, what is this? I don't understand this. But when I tried to ask them about it, they refused to answer. They would sidestep the questions. They wouldn't.
The Mennonites are very closed about their beliefs. Yeah,
absolutely. And they're all blonde haired and blue eyed too, but let's not go there.
Yeah.
So I started questioning things really, really young. And, when my parents divorced, they of course were excommunicated from the Catholic Church. They couldn't go anymore. So, we stayed with my mother, and she quit church, and the old man changed religions. So, of course, I learned if the Catholics kick you out, you just go somewhere else. That's fine.
Right. Yeah. It's not the end of the world.
Exactly. And so, you know, after the Satanic Bible incident, I kind of abandoned religion completely for 30 years. But I always said very proudly, you know, chest beating, I'm a fallen Catholic.
Yeah.
Because they indoctrinate you so much. You still refer to yourself that way. Even though you aren't living that way, you just say, well, you know, I was born a Catholic and,
recovering Catholic, I hear.
Recovering Catholic. Exactly. So how I actually came to Satanism recently was during the pandemic. So this is where it gets a little weird. So you'll have to bear with me. But, around the pandemic, I was feeling very untethered. I was feeling very lost, but I had achieved a lot. You know, I have a fantastic marriage. I've been married for 25 years. I have a great career. I've got a kid in university. She's doing very well, but there was a hole, like something was missing and I didn't know what it was. And then the pandemic comes and you get to spend all this time alone with your thoughts. So that didn't help. So I thought, oh, you know what? There's a church just over here. Maybe I should go back. Maybe that's what I'm missing. I have no idea what I'm missing. Maybe I should go back to church.
Mm.
And a friend of mine is a very, very devout Catholic. And he rides with a group in the Knights of Columbus called the Knights on Bikes.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
So I'm a former motorcycle club member. I was a patch holder, and I was still riding, but I wasn't riding with anybody. So I said, well, maybe I go back to church and I join the Knights on Bikes. Maybe that'll be something that'll fill my time. I went back to church around Easter, I guess, of 2021. So things were kind of opening up. People were still wearing masks and it was fucking awful. Like it was awful. Like none of the sermons resonated with me. The bread was still the shits, and you can't drink the wine anymore. So that didn't even give me anything to look forward to. So
nothing to dull the pain.
No, but fascinating enough is that the church still wanted my donation. And now, oh, they'll take your banking info so they can do an automatic debit for you. You don't even have to go anymore. They'll just take the money from your account. No, that's not happening. And my experience with the Knights on Bikes, I don't know if I had a communicable disease or what, but I never heard from these guys, not once. I reached out number of times, nothing. I'm like, well, what the fuck? God is supposed to take you back, right? Like, I wasn't kicked out. I didn't do nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't Catholic mean universal, like literally?
Yes, exactly. So I literally thought, you know, kind of being really unfounded at this point, going, well, the only place I thought I could go I didn't want to become a Mennonite and join a Christian church. I didn't want to be born again. Mm-hmm. I literally said to my wife, well, you know what? If the Catholics don't want me, maybe the devil will take me. And I bought another copy of the Satanic Bible. That was my light bulb moment. When I read that book, it was not the hellfire and brimstone tome that I thought it was when I was 19. I opened that book and all of that Catholic guilt that I had, all of the shit that I had growing up, I read that book and I went, I'm not a bad guy. Right. Holy shit, I'm not a bad guy. You mean I can be envious? I can be greedy? These are things that are natural and they're human, and I'm not a shithead for feeling this? Wow, this is amazing. And wait a minute, there's no sky daddy that's coming to save me, to make me feel better about myself, to make things happen for me. I made my own way and my own life for years and always said, if I want something, I got to do it. And now here's a book that says, if you want something, you got to do it yourself because you're your own God. I'm like, well, shit. Okay. So it let me put a name to what I was doing. I didn't realize that I was doing these things, and, you know, really enforces our belief that Satanists are born, not made.
Oh,
you know, you don't,
yeah.
You don't learn this, you do it. And suddenly someone else is doing it and you're going, well, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
This is amazing. And so I applied for my registered membership in the COS.
How did you, so you bought the Satanic Bible. How did you then find out about the Church of Satan as an organization? Or was it kind of one and the same? You looked for Satanism and found it all at the same time.
It was one and the same. And, I'm kind of jumping around. It's actually really good because the way I kind of made notes and wrote it on my other podcast, this makes more sense to say it this way. I'm a, big, big proponent of stuff. I love stuff. I love aesthetics.
Things, and yeah.
Things.
I got you.
And
trinkets.
And having been a biker, I love my big heavy rings, right?
That's, oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So if I tag you, you don't forget it. I mean, that's the main thing.
Right.
I still like my heavy jewelry, and so I found the Warlock Emporium.
This episode is brought to you by the Warlock Emporium. The Warlock Emporium is creating bespoke items for the chosen few. The Warlock Emporium is the only authorized seller of items bearing the Warlock Sigil, created by Magister Dr. Robert Johnson, author of The Satanic Warlock. The Warlock Emporium is now offering a 15% military discount. Visit thewarlockemporium.com for more information.
Because I bought from Frost over at Satan Me, and I bought some stuff from Merciless over on his site, and then I found the Warlock.
Yeah,
Rabbit Crow. And then I found the Emporium and started buying stuff from there. And they screwed up one of my orders. So I reached out to the owner and I said, hey, what's going on, dude? And he came back and he was probably one of the most straightforward guys that I had ever talked to. Like, no bullshit. Just wanted to make sure that things were going right. And I said at that time, wow. Like, we're all supposed to be douchebags. Like, Satanists are all supposed to be douchebags, right? Conventional wisdom says we're all selfish. We're all out for ourselves. And here's a guy that's...
And we are.
Well, yes, but we're not douchebags, right?
Right.
Unless that's an individual choice. But I said, well, if this guy's this good, is everybody in the organization like this? And so I did a little bit more digging, and that's when I decided to apply for my registered membership. Like, I want to be part of this. I want to confirm my commitment to myself. And my way of doing that was by getting that red card, because it was the, okay, I did it.
Like, it's a ritual in and of itself to submit.
And it's so, it's so symbolic to own a card that says citizen of the Infernal Empire. Like, you know, the Catholics don't get a card. I mean, the TST does, but that's another show. So after I had gotten my card, I did some more studying and I submitted my active membership application and I kept going. And you know, it takes a while to get approved.
Yeah.
And so kept studying, kept learning, kept working, went back and looked at my application and went, well, these answers are not good. Like, maybe, I thought maybe they're not taking me because I sucked at the answer. Maybe I didn't test well. And so I opened it and I went, these answers are not what they're looking for. Like, I've got to change this and show, like, hey, I'm on board. I get this now. Becoming an active member was, again, another step in that validation, saying, yeah, dude, you get it. Okay, we're the leadership, and we say, this guy understands what we're about. Through the owner of the Warlock Emporium, then, I saw an ad for the Warlock Academy. So I'm sure that most of your listeners are familiar with Magister Robert Johnson's The Satanic Warlock, the companion to the Satanic Witch. And MRJ runs a Warlock Academy where he takes 9 people out of hundreds of applicants, and it's basically a finishing school for the Satanic Gentleman. So Magister Johnson's really big on masculinity, and how Anton LaVey wrote the book for the Satanic Witch, explaining to women how to use lesser magic. And Magister Johnson felt that there should be one for the men.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Anton LaVey said, well, men are intrinsically born with this. They don't need a guidebook. The conversation they had, well, I beg to differ. So
yeah, the 21st century is it's been something for masculinity.
So I joined the Warlock Academy. I was accepted, became a graduate of the second class, and since then it's like I've had a rocket strapped to my ass. There's just nothing I can't accomplish at this point. I've started a blog. I've written a book that's going to be published.
Well, tell us about that. Plug your stuff, my friend.
Oh, sure. Well, I started out, what I figured was, I came to this late in life. I came to this close to 50, my late 40s. And I figured if there are people, if I'm in that situation, there are probably a lot of people in the same situation as me. So why not pass on my experience to people in my age group? And what it kind of morphed into was, our canon is incredible. But our canon is very good at telling us what. It is not good at telling us how.
Interesting perspective. Yeah.
It will give us the tenets. It will give us the basics. But there's nothing that I had found that said, okay, now I have this knowledge. How did I apply it
to everyday life? Yeah.
And successfully. Now, that's a story that the common person can relate to. Because to tell somebody something is to give them information, but to make it anecdotal and to be able to relate it in a way that's understandable to a person that might not be grabbing it, that's where the effective communication is. And that's why I started my blog. I had originally started my blog on the Warlock Emporium, and the owner was happy to publish my blogs, but apparently I'm a bit of a control freak because he wasn't publishing them fast enough. So I went, well, okay, I'll go off and do my thing, and started a Facebook page called Neutral Wisdom, Contemplations of a Satanic Warlock, which is also the title of my first book, and posted a number of blogs on there and gained a small following. I'm a writer, not a marketer. I don't know how to attract people. So anybody listening, come and check me out, but I'll give you the address later. And of course, Facebook being Facebook, I got hacked. So suddenly the Satanic
Warlock. That just happened, right?
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Suddenly the Satanic Warlock's trying to sell you the best weight loss diet you ever heard. And I thought, well, no, I'd take my own advice if I was doing that. But So I got off of there and I went on to locals.com, which is where Magister Bill M is with his Satan spleen. That gave me the idea to go to locals.com, which is a more free community for content creators. So that's where I'm publishing all of the information about my current projects. So in addition to the blog, as I say, I've published a book, or it's in publishing now, and I've written a second.
Is the first book that's in publishing right now, is that like a collection of essays you'd already written for Neutralism, or is it all brand new content?
It's a mixture of both. So it's okay. Published and unpublished essays. I kind of kept some close to the vest because I want people to buy the book. So if they're if they liked what they saw for free, maybe they'll give me some money. Who knows?
Yeah, and you say you're not a marketing guy. Come on.
No, I'm just guessing. Fascinatingly enough, one day I was driving to the office and I heard Magister Bill M's Satan Spleen podcast. And I just went, why am I not doing this? So I started my own podcast. It's the Neutral Wisdom podcast. And It's basically an extension of my blogs. So I will start with an article and I'll bring on a very special guest usually to discuss the topics. I've got some very interesting programs lined up for the future. So, you know, if you're interested in hearing how the philosophy of Satanism can be applied successfully in life, come by and give us a listen for sure. And I don't want to convert anybody. I don't want to proselytize. Let's be honest, I don't really want that many more Satanists because that's a me thing and that's a you thing.
Right.
We're both pretty cool, so let's keep the club private.
Everything falls apart when you let girls in.
Exactly. You know, two people, you have drama. My point of it is to not aim at the Satanists. We know what the philosophy is.
Yeah.
I want to aim at everybody to say, here's a philosophy that works, and it's like any other self-help. You know, unlike Tony Robbins, I'm not selling tickets to make you listen to me talk. I will do that down the road. But the other thing is, there is such a misunderstanding about what we are. You know, every time I disclose to somebody that I'm a Satanist, I always have to qualify it by saying, no, I don't eat babies and I don't kick puppies and I don't.
And so, now you have to say, like, no, I don't protest outside of abortion clinics and I don't teach after school programs.
Exactly. Yeah. So the point of it is to say, this is a way of living. No matter what you call it, it's a great way to live. There's a lot of great lessons. Be open-minded. We can learn something from each other always. And one of the chapters in my book is called The Dreaded S-Word specifically, because I know that I'm not going to sell a million copies because I put Satanic Warlock on the cover, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm limiting my market. So I'm going to get Satanists, and I'm going to get people who are open-minded. And so far, you know, the publishing team and the reviewers of the book have said, this is not what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want to read this book because of what I thought this was going to be. And it is completely not that. That's what I'm trying to do is not so much explain the what exists. It's the how.
Yeah. Many years ago, I first read, I believe it was The Devil's Notebook, where the doctor published Pentagonal Revisionism. And in the heading of that, obviously this was originally written during the height of the Satanic Panic. And he says in the little lead-in that we've spent far too much time explaining what we don't do. Well, here's what we do, right? And yes. I feel like there, with the rise of social media and the internet, and everybody gets an equal platform for their opinion, which is just another argument against equality.
Thank you.
But I think that we've hit that point again in our history. You know, the doctor always said the first 100 years or first 99 years are the hardest. We've hit that point again where we've been so busy explaining, hey, we don't do these after school programs. We don't put up these terrible statues, like objectively, aesthetically terrible statues, state capitals and whatnot. I feel like there is a shift happening, and I think that you're a part of it. I'd like to think that I'm a part of it, where we're tired of explaining what we don't do. It's time for you to hear what we do again.
Yes.
And I love that the more Satanists that I talk to, the more I'm getting that kind of sentiment, even if it's unspoken, is coming out. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, I've had all the arguments on social media, and I've done all that. I'm tired of that. I'm about to do some satanic shit. Right now.
Yes, exactly. Maybe a little positive messaging wouldn't be a bad thing.
It's lovely to see, you know, and these are, as much as we've been around for almost 60 years, that's very young in terms of world religion. And so these ebbs and flows are going to happen. I'm sure that in both our lifetimes, we're going to end up in the point where we have to talk about what we don't do again, in mass, but I'm very happy to see that we are all kind of shifting gears to talking about what we do.
This episode is brought to you by Underworld Amusements. Since 2007, Underworld Amusements has been creating, producing, publishing, and distributing Curious Sundries and Callous Broadsides. From the Satanic Scriptures by Magus Peter H. Gilmore to Might is Right, the authoritative edition by Ragnar Redbeard, Underworld Amusements is your source for the most dangerous books ever written. Visit underworldamusements.com for more information.
You mentioned when you were talking about your military career and the civilian side of your military career, a big part of that was teaching. And I'm wondering how much of that time spent teaching kids how to play drums and whatnot and doing PR for the Canadian military has kind of influenced how you do things now.
That's a really good question, actually. When we're instructing technique, it is usually technique for the sake of technique. So if I can draw a parallel, what we have in our canon is technique. And we're outlining our technique. But then when we're teaching music, we are teaching technique to apply to expression. And expression can't really be taught. Expression comes from within. So what I'm trying to do with my writing, my teaching, anytime I have a social speaking engagement or a gig, you know, as it were, is we'll present a technique as the technique, but then we will talk about the expression piece, which is where the creativity comes from. We'll give you the foundational concept to build on and create your own expression. And that's what I believe my role is. I would never give advice. Wouldn't want to be guilty of satanic sin number one, right? But if I put it out there, responsibility to the responsible, brother. I put it out there. How you take it is 100% up to you, and that's why I call it neutral wisdom.
Are you still doing the Devil Salon podcast?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. So the Devil Salon is actually made up of a group of Warlock Academy graduates, and the Blackguard of the Hellfire Brotherhood is a group of alumni that still communicate on a regular basis. We still speak with Magister Robert Johnson. We uphold the Warlock Academy principles and the satanic ideals. We're a good network of comrades, of friends. We do share a brotherhood. We get together. We travel once a year together. We all pick a destination and we go. And we are doing a podcast for the satanic gentleman at this point. So our podcast is designed to address masculinity in today's modern environment. Men and masculinity in general have taken a bit of a shit kicking with regards to toxic masculinity. There's a lot of men that kind of forgot how to be men because it's been beaten out of them emotionally. We kind of use Satanism as a foundation to say, no, take it back. Take your masculinity back. There's no need to be ashamed of being a man. Take your masculinity back. Use what the Church of Satan has taught you. That's currently the podcast that we're doing with those brothers, and we tend to release an episode every month or so.
At this point now, having been in the Church of Satan for 4 years, do you wish that you would have read it back then, or do you think you just mentally would not have been ready for it?
I wasn't ready. I had a lot of growing up to do before I got to the point where I was mature enough to see the Satanic Bible for what it is. I would have seen it for what it is not. I had always been really good at manipulating people. I was a bit of an asshole in my younger years, as we are. You know, does that to us. Imagine being an asshole and being able to manipulate people and then being given the keys to the kingdom. It would have been a scary thing. I would have got shot. I'm sure of it. I would have been insufferable. I mean, some will say I'm insufferable now, but there's a difference between being an insufferable 50-year-old and being an insufferable 20-year-old, right? So it was, I think that these things will all manifest when they are supposed to. Timing is everything, right? There's no serendipity or providence, but timing is everything, and I think that book just kind of came to me at a time where I was ready to read it.
Yeah, and it sounds like it worked. It stratified you at a time when you were not ready to read it, but then when you were, it drew you in. So it worked. It was stratification in action.
Being an out Satanist, I always wear my Baphomet, always. Mm. And it works in two ways. It will attract people who are curious enough to ask what it is, which is great. And it will repel people who know what it is and don't want to have anything to do with it. And I'm like, great, I don't want to talk to you anyway, so not a problem.
Right?
It's a great filter. And I think fully that Anton LaVey knew that by using that word, it would be a tremendous filter because it would attract a certain kind of person. It's all how we present and what we do with it, I think.
Very true. I have to ask you the question.
Oh, no.
I ask everyone who comes on the show.
Please don't.
You have admitted, my friend, that you are an active member of the Church of Satan. So we have to know for posterity's sake. This is for our children. What is your favorite joke?
All right. Well, I like to tell dad jokes, and my kid likes to, well, she doesn't like to. She hates my dad jokes. So I thought, well, I'm going to use this one. So everybody who's listening, I apologize in advance. What do you call a fish with a missing eye?
I don't know.
A fish. And the COS took me anyway. Okay, I'm just saying. But that's the joke I put. It's a fish. Okay, that's
out fucking standing.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Well, Rob, thank you for coming on the show, man. Thank you for telling your story, both of your military career and of finding Satanism. And I gotta say, man, I'm really proud of how hard charging you've been these last 4 years in the COS, and I'm very proud to have you amongst the ranks of the Legionnaires. I look forward to everything you're going to put out. So real quick, drop all your websites and podcasts, where you can find your podcast.
All right. Well, you can join the community on Locals at neutralwisdom.locals.com, which will have all my blogs. You can find my podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you can get your podcasts from. And you can check me out on Instagram at neutral_wisdom.
Awesome. Thanks once again for coming on. And sincerely, from one veteran to another, thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you all for your service as well. It's an honor and a privilege to be part of the Inferno Legion, and I thank you for accepting me as a member.
And until we can do it again, hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
There is a new veteran crisis hotline number. If you or a veteran you know are experiencing a crisis, please dial 988 and press 1. Once again, that is 988 and press 1 when prompted.